Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Wednesday, the 15th of April.
Coming up today, we talk to Ireland's Fresh Prince of Newcastle as the Saudis get their cash out.
May fall here for Anderson! 1-1! John Anderson!
We take a trip down memory lane with one of Ireland's sporting legends, Tony Ward.
Ward then, round the corner. It's high enough, and the crowd seems to say it's great enough.
And because your in-laws never let you down, we speak to All-Ireland winner and two-time All-Star Brendan Bugler as he tries to mind two small boys.
40 seconds to go. Down to the man who's left out, Derek Holman. They're ahead by three, Clare. Looking to try and put it over the bar. Very tight angle. He might get a chance here. He does. He walks it all the way in. It's all over. Clare are the champions.
Look how happy you are, Marie. All that and much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, happy out here in a bit of Clare winning the All-Ireland.
I know. It kind of makes me want to, for the summer GAA action to get back quicker though. That's the only thing about it. Like, it just reminds me of the good old days.
The good old days, yeah. They'll be back.
Speaking of good old days, it's brilliant to have you back after a little break.
I did. Obviously, we were around home the whole lot, so I was kept busy. I think I've drawn every character in Ninjago. Do you know what Ninjago is? You know, the Lego ninjas and Star Wars. I've had my nails painted. I've just been hanging around with my kids.
So you had to mind your own children.
Yeah. We tormented Jenny about getting a dog and she stayed strong. I've had a good few days off, fresh and ready to go. Do you know what I've noticed though? Hurling and football are no longer our national sports. Barbecuing and gardening. We're brilliant at it.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on, all right? A lot of home improvements.
Yeah. I'd nearly say it's essential work to have a garden centre open at the moment.
I think some of them are open. I know that some of them are doing click and collect.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll WhatsApp you about that later.
Send me a message about that. I'll tell you who.
How are you getting on?
Yeah, good. I had Ruby for the last few days and he was actually in really good form.
Yeah, I was listening. You nearly broke him at a point.
I did,
which is rare with Ruby.
I found it surprising to see him in such consistently positive form, but it was great. He did say, though, a little while ago that he was going to look at the glass half full from now on, and he seems to be following through on that. So well done to Ruby.
Yeah, fair play to him. He won't be happy today. Is it racing suspended in the UK until May at a minimum? So obviously, I think it's worse news for Gillian. She has to put up with him now for another little while.
That's true. But I think they do seem fairly confident. Aidan O'Brien was on as well earlier in the week that horse racing is one of the ones that can come back, that they would be able to implement social distancing and run it behind closed doors and keep the necessary people there to a minimum. So I think they could be one of the first sports to come back. And
they've shown before that everything was closed down that they can do it. So I think they're a bit ahead of everyone else as well, that they show, you know, horse racing can get up and running, because it would be good to have some sport, Marie. If I watch, like, I've been watching Tiger King. Have you seen that on Netflix?
No.
That's the closest thing to sport at the moment I can get.
I must watch it though. People are talking about
it. It's priceless. It is the most ridiculous show you've ever... I actually thought it was like The Office. You know what I mean? I thought it was made up and, you know, like it was comedy. But it's completely serious. It's just bizarre.
Well, there is a little bit of sports news, as there seems to be every day. The Tour de France was postponed for 2 months. It'll be back in August and September, the finale on the 20th of September. It was inevitable, really. And some bad news for Cricket Ireland. They've had to bring in a series of pay cuts because of the pandemic affecting their whole schedule. And then another tiny little bit of news you might be interested in. There's a lot of people doing the shave or die. The Leash Hurlers are doing it for the Do It for Dan. But Leinster Rugby have started doing it. And there's a picture floating around the internet of Rob Kearney with the shaved head.
Oh, no way. He'd still be handsome.
He's grown a beard.
Oh, so he's just like upside down.
Yeah.
Rob Kearney is the only person I know, Barry's brother maybe, Dave, that could look handsome upside down.
I don't know if you think so when you have a look. He doesn't actually look like himself. So they're trying to raise funds for the frontline workers to help in the fight against COVID-19. So there's a lot of people who are out there. Leinster are doing it for the Feed the Heroes. So
super calls. Well done, Leinster Rugby. And like you've been mentioning all week, there's people doing incredible things. And Marie, what I noticed even just being off the last while, you're actually privileged to work. You know what I mean? Now, we're so, so lucky to be able to come in and... I wouldn't say it's essential service, but it's nice to be able to get out and chat.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we spoke about the importance of sport and the distraction that it gives. And look, we mightn't have sport at the moment, but at least we're able to talk about it and talk to some of the biggest sports stars out there about their careers and their highlights. And we're going to be taking a trip down memory lane, as you said, with Tony Ward later on. And I'm sure lots of people will want to relive some great moments when they were watching Tony play many, many sports. And just another piece of news as well. Irish Horse Racing have raised 50,000 for the Feed the Heroes. Wow. So people are doing brilliant.
Yeah, they're fair play to them. And you do know what? It's lovely that people actually think like that. And look, I think hopefully, you know, we're going to come through this stronger, but with a new respect for each other, hopefully. Which, sorry, I don't want to get all kind of like preachy and all that.
You've had a few days off. I'm sure that you've had a lot of time to think, you know, let it out.
Do you know one thing, though, that I've noticed? People passing each other on the roads and not saying hi. That's such an un-Irish thing. And I know we're all a bit cautious and careful, but we're Irish. Given all, how's it going? How are we getting on? You know what I mean? Let's keep the spirits at least.
You must be really struggling because you've always said that you miss the contact of rugby. So now, let alone, like, not only do you have to stay away from everybody, like, there's nothing for you now.
Exactly. I will be to be avoided when we're out of lockdown. I will just be randomly hugging people.
But and hitting people's shoulders.
I wish. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned about the Tour de France. That's a bit of a loss, isn't it? Whatever about some sports like hurling, football, rugby, they're always there. But the ones like Wimbledon and Tour de France are kind of marquees in the summer, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like, you know, school holidays, afternoons off, sitting down in the sitting room with the curtains closed, just watching a few stages, some beautiful scenery, and even better when there was Irish riders doing so well.
It always reminds me, this is an awful thing to say, it always reminds me of Poland. We used to be in Poland and Spala, and it was all you had was Eurosport, and you watched the Tour de France. This was when...
Bad memories, though.
Yeah, bad memories. So you were looking at them going, oh, I'd kill to be climbing up that mountain rather than being here, stuck in Poland with Liam Hennessy shouting at you.
Makes you stronger, builds character.
I don't know about that. I think I'm going down the Ruby Walsh line of thinking that so many sports people are overcooked. I think certainly rest doesn't get enough of a play.
Yeah.
We can chat to Brendan about that in a while.
Yeah, and he's actually on the line now.
Ah, there you go. Look at that. That wasn't even meant.
How are you?
We're good, Brendan. How are you?
Good, no, Marie. Good.
So what are you up to? Minding your children as well?
That's it, no, Marie. That's it. Minding your two nephews. Someone has to do it. So, sure, look at it. Just crazy times, crazy busy at the moment, but trying to take every single positive I possibly can out of it, and one of them is, you know, getting the opportunity to spend as much time as I possibly can with the two boys. So look, it's a huge positive in that regard.
Brendan, both myself and Marie gave no context here. Obviously, we've been calling in a few family favours and friends, and you're Marie's mother-in-law, but you've also, like Ted Walsh last night, you've earned your stripes both on and off the pitch in All-Ireland, two All-Stars. And now you've made the move into coaching. You're doing you're coaching with Davy Fitz in Wexford and Sam Fannin's, who I know broke Christian's heart this year. So being away from the sport must be tough, but that transition into coaching, how have you found that?
Yeah, I suppose, Danica, I've really, really enjoyed it. I suppose first and foremost, when it comes to the buzz you get from playing, nothing can really replace that, I have found. But I suppose in the last couple of years of my playing career, I'd been thinking, you know, what am I going to do after this? Because I've been playing at the top level with Clare for 11 years, and, you know, it becomes such an obsession for those 11 years that I was looking, especially in the last year before I retired, I was looking at, okay, what can I do here now to replace that? And I suppose when I did retire, there was a couple of media gigs that would have come up, and It just really wasn't really for me. I'd have found myself maybe being a little bit nervous before doing them, nervous during them, and very kind of conscious of what I would have said after doing them. And there was no enjoyment whatsoever out of it. And I would have found it more so being a job and a handy gig to get, more so than any enjoyment whatsoever. So I suppose the next thing really is coaching. And I suppose, you know, I'd have been always keeping an eye in when it came to coaching through schools level since 2009. So it was the next big step for me, and I'm really enjoying it.
We were chatting to John O'Shea a number of weeks ago, and he was saying that it's really helpful for him, just being out of it so soon, that he can demonstrate and show the skills or maybe the drill he wants. Do you find that the case? You know, it is very helpful to be so soon out of the game.
Yeah, well, I would have felt myself, Dunica, if I, you know, went 5 or 6 years out of it, I'd have found it very, very hard to come back into it, especially at the top level. So, you know, when Davey just rang me there last winter, it was a no-brainer, you know, once I discussed it at home and stuff like that. To get the opportunity to work with a team like Wexford, it was a no-brainer, and I was jumping at that opportunity when it came to me. But, yeah, look, you don't want to be out of the game for too long, you know, and I get a real, real kick out of it, you know, and especially, you know, I'd have got that kick out of it the last number of years at school level. And really what it does, I know you can talk about all the skills and everything else like that, but for me what it really boils down to is just the attitude of players, you know, and attitude will trump skill and talent any single day of the week. And when you can find players with a good attitude, you know, that are willing to learn and are disciplined, there's huge satisfaction for you as a coach out of that, you know, working with those players. So for me, I'm getting such a buzz out of that now, working with those type of players. And yeah, that's where I'm getting my kick.
Brendan, we have had a lot of people on over the last 6 months, and the point's been made on several occasions that teachers often make really good coaches because they have those communication skills from all the years of talking to the students from the top of the class. Have you found that that's been a big asset to you?
I suppose it has, Breen Marie. Yeah, like when it comes to extracurricular, when it comes to, you know, to coaching, I don't find it as a job or anything like that. It's just it's another part of being a teacher. I think, you know, when I had the hurling background, it was just obviously a natural transition. You're going to coach teams in the schools and stuff like that. Yeah, of course it is. So you're standing up in front of, you know, 30 kids every day, you know, for a couple of hours a day. If you don't have good communication skills, you're not going to make a good coach. I think they're the two key ingredients, I think, is your communication skills and, I suppose, how you can relate to players and get on with them, really.
You've had so many different coaches throughout your career. When you look back through it, who were the ones that influenced you most?
He has to say Dave, you know, watch this.
Well, look, obviously, I had fantastic coaches. You mentioned Paul Kinnear, Joe. I had different coaches, like, you know, strength and conditioning coaches, hurling coaches. I don't like to name, you know, people in case I forget anybody, you know, because I've had such great coaches all the way up from club level and all of that. But, you know, when it comes to Davey, you know, I first got to know Davey properly, I suppose, in 2011. And, you know, he was my commander, and that's the way I would have viewed him as. And I think he would have viewed me as one of his probably trusted lieutenants, you know, during his time with Clare. And, you know, from a player and a manager's point of view, we had a strong relationship and a strong understanding, and one that was built on just huge respect for each other. So, you know, he is someone that I have massive respect for in, you know, in relation to what he's done and achieved, and he has been a huge influence on me. Yeah.
You never mentioned your father-in-law.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Never mind him. He dropped me.
I told you, Marie, I didn't want to mention people in case I forgot him. But yeah, Tim was involved when my first year involved with Clare, and I would have learned an awful lot from him, obviously, like all the coaches back then.
Brendan, can I take you up on the Davey one? Because I know you can't relate it with the top level, but even I've seen him on Fit as Family, and for me, his point of difference, I can't believe how he can get people and players to go beyond themselves. And looking at it more, I've never seen a fella to care as much. I think that's his, what makes him so different. He is so invested in everything he puts himself into. You know, like, would you have examples of that, or would you have moments where you would have seen traits in Davy that you think make him unique?
Well, I think from the very first meeting we had, I can remember it was Blowing Bunratty, Dunica, when he came on board in 2011, and it was just straight away you could identify that here's a guy that's an obsessive, you know, and he's obsessed about his craft. He's obsessed about, you know, when he used to play himself as a hurler, now as a manager or as a coach or whatever, you know. And I think, you know, when you can see how much, as a player, when you can see how much he gives to them, the time, the effort, he thinks about the game, in my opinion, unlike anybody else, you know, and the time, the minutes, the hours he puts into thinking about it is phenomenal. And I think, you know, you get by him when people can see that, and he knows that he's doing everything in his possible power for the team that he's in charge of, you know, be it club level. You see what he's done with Sixmill Bridge last year along with him and the rest of the backroom team there. Now we're seeing what he's doing with Wexford. I think players buy into that and they respect that greatly. And I've seen that right through my time with Clare, and now I'm seeing it with Wexford.
Brendan, obviously you're young in your coaching career, and like, you're learning a lot from people like him. Do you think there'll come a point where you'll need to move away? You know, that there'll be a point where you've learnt as much as you can under Davy, and there's maybe a plan for you to take on a big role like that yourself?
I'm not really looking down. I'm only looking to the next. If you look at it this stage, you don't know what way the championship is going to be, if there is going to be a championship at all. I'm just taking every single opportunity I get here and now. I'll take Dunica. And look, at we've had a great year this year with St Flannan's College going on and winning a Hearty Cup.
Oh, he had to mention it, didn't he?
Beating your guys in the final, you know?
Yeah.
And, I'm learning off that from Davy, and I love working with him. So we'll just live in the now, and whatever will happen in the future will happen in the future. But I really enjoy being involved in a backroom team with him.
Well dodged, Brendan. Fair play to you. Well dodged. Yeah, some defender.
Brendan, we saw the news yesterday that the GAA is unlikely to come back or see action before midsummer. Just in terms of trying to motivate a team and keep them interested when there is no fixture in place, officially anyway, how difficult is that, and how are you doing it?
Sure, look, it's hugely difficult, Marie. And, you know, unlike professional sports people, you know, it's really coming down to, because GAA players aren't professional sports people, you have to remember that, like, and really it's coming down to how motivated, or I won't even say motivated because it's hard to be motivated every day, but how disciplined guys are to get up and do whatever they're... Every team is on a programme, you know, and I suppose with us, the guys will be liaising an awful lot with our S&C coach, both, you know, Timmy Crow and obviously Graham Byrne, top S&C coach. So the lads are really engaging with them. From a coach's point of view, like myself, it's very, very hard. And all other, you know, coaches in the backroom team as well, very, very hard for us, I suppose. You're relying on lads and trusting that they're doing stuff in their back gardens against the wall and just hoping that they're keeping their eye in and their touch in. But I think there can be serious gains made in relation to the physical aspect of the game. So what you're going to find if this thing kicks off at all is the guys who are extremely disciplined, they're the guys that are going to excel, you know, if this kicks off at all. And I know they're saying July from yesterday, but it's hard to see it, being honest, when you have Simon Harris coming out, you know, the night before, two nights before, saying that whenever, you know, we get back to some bit of normality, that there still have to be that little bit of social distance. And, well, you know, it's going to be hard to fill a corner back to social distance from the corner forward if you're playing, you know. And it's reality, like, and I can't see it myself. And, you know, then I believe the GPA had a meeting there yesterday, or could have been the day before. And I think players mightn't, you know, like playing behind closed doors as well. So that's another thing that that'll have to be discussed. So it's all up in there at the moment, Marie.
So the players obviously are going to struggle because they're not kind of working towards a date. But for someone like Davy, how's he coping when, like, his whole life has just revolved around matches and hurling and training and playing and just the GAA in general?
Yeah, look, there's an awful lot of people that have been affected by this right across the board, you know, and, you know, people involved in the GAA are the exact same way. So it's really, really tough. But I suppose for Fitzy, he's involved in so many things that, and he's always on the go, you know. Maybe it might be a good time for him to relax a small little bit, you know. He's a very, very busy man once January kicks off to win the year in.
We know, Brendan, as well, that you are a musician and you have been famed for getting the concertina, is it, out after matches? Better get that right.
The accordion, yeah.
The accordion. Close.
After one match, yeah.
You're being modest now, come on.
No, honestly, it just happened one time and I keep saying the same story, but I didn't bring it in my gear bag today.
Look, anyway. You
boots,
can't...
gum shield, accordion.
You can't hide from me. I know you have a CD out.
He does not.
I do not have a CD out. My father has a CD out, all right.
And you feature on it.
In the track or two, all right. But no, like, it's unique now. And I suppose since Davey has called me back to, you know, or called me in with Wexford, I've got the opportunity to work with Mikey Collins, better known as Gazzy. And it was that story is All-Ireland final. Gazzy literally got an accordion. Don't ask me where he got an accordion. That wasn't my accordion, I was saying, in the dressing room. Like, he got it someplace or another. But, yeah, people think that it was pre-planned and everything else like that. It wasn't. It was literally just thrown up in my lap. But, sure, you can't repeat that. So, how am I going? I don't play it every day. Like,
I see you on Facebook playing it quite a lot now.
Yeah, at home, not in the dressing room. At a match.
Well, we've Robbie Henshaw on tomorrow night, and he plays the accordion as well. We should have, like, what would you call that? A playoff or a squeeze box off? Anything for sport at the moment, Bryn.
Yeah, tell you
a session.
It clears up there. We might have a session up around the
border. Do you know what I'm massively interested. Obviously, a defender, but you in your coaching role at the moment, you're coaching attack, aren't you? You know, you're coaching the forwards. What's the thinking there?
I suppose, look, that's Davey's decision. There's just a little bit of general coaching and then probably more focusing with the forwards and stuff like that. I think when Davey was deciding that, again, he's the one that calls the shots there. He's looking at it from, okay, from a defender's point of view, what would I have hated as being a defender? Hmm. You know, and I suppose that's what I'm relating to the forwards and stuff like that. You know, me in my time as a player, what I hated, the runs, the type of runs I hated the forward making, you know, the runs the forwards are making just to clear space for other forwards coming into that space, all this sort of stuff. I suppose that's the way Davey would have seen it. And I don't know if you can ask Davey why you brought me down to Wexford or not, but I'd like to think that if I was reviewing a game afterwards, that if I was picking out, you know, certain players or whatever, I think Davey would probably have picked out the same sort of players. So he knows that I think along the same lines as him. So in relation to forward play, I suppose, yeah, I don't know, you'll have to ask him that.
Brendan, I know we're having a bit of a laugh and a joke here now about the accordion and
yes,
all the rest.
Go on, Crow.
There is a serious note to this as well, and your wife Jo is a nurse and she's working in a COVID ward, so you are minding the two boys at home, entertaining them with the training and with the music, but there's a serious element as well, and like there must be a little bit of fear as when she's coming home that she's been working all day in a situation that isn't ideal for people.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, she's very strong, like, when it comes to that. And one thing about her, I suppose, she doesn't really want to bring her work home, so she doesn't really want me talking about her work or anything like that. She just wants to come in the door whatever time it is, and obviously her hours are a little bit prolonged now, you know, compared to what they were a couple of weeks ago. So when she comes home, she just wants to spend a bit of time with the boys. But, you know, we haven't really discussed. We're young, we're fit, we're healthy, you know, so I don't think there's an element of fear when she walks in the door into my house, I suppose. Look, at if there was elderly people around or something like that, there would be an element of fear. But, no, look, we're very proud of what she's doing and everything else like that. And hopefully all this will be over sooner rather than later.
Brendan, 100%. Not only yourself, but the whole country is proud of the work they're doing. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. I hope Marie gets you a good Christmas present this year, and Chris Kringle if you do manage to land her. But thanks for joining us.
Thanks a million, Dunica. Thanks, Marie.
Thanks. Keep your phone on for a session tomorrow.
Oh, there we go. Robbie Henshaw's on. Never mind Robbie Henshaw. Guess who we've after the break? You
Go
know.
On.
Tony Ward. Game On 2FM. Welcome back to Game On. Marie, always handy to have an old brother-in-law that's one of you All-Stars and an All-Ireland. You've certainly been tapping into it for the lads, though, Timmy and Billy and Davey, have you?
Yeah, we've a WhatsApp group, family WhatsApp group, and because everyone has so much time on their hands, they're playing so much sport. So the kids, and this is my dad's grandkids, all videos of them have been put up doing their different sports. So my four nephews who live in Kilmaley, they got a wall ball installed in their house. So they have a hurling wall ball, like foundations dug, and a proper like one you'd see in a GA pitch put up. So the four boys who go from 7 to 5 are just outside belting the ball off the wall constantly.
Whoa.
It's not competitive at all.
No, not at all. But then
we got the Astro, they got a wall ball, you know.
I was just about to say it. They're probably going, they've got an unbelievable AstroTurf out their back garden.
So when it's all over now, when we're actually able to go visit my parents, like there's 16 grandchildren and they're all just going to descend. And my dad calls the back garden Crow Park. Okay. Out the back, big match. Put all the skills to test.
Gee, and that's where you honestly learn it, isn't it? It's bouncing off your cousins. You're always trying to impress them.
Really is.
Yeah.
Brendan was good crack though.
He was good crack. He wasn't having it about the accordion. You set him up there in trouble over that. But you're right. Like it's his wife Jo, obviously your sister. But it's like, the, you know what I mean? The efforts that are being put in there, I'd say you'd be a nervous wreck every time your family go out if you're...
It's tough going because anyone that we hear, I think, in the interviews when they come out of hospital after recovering from COVID, they always say the care that they got was unbelievable, that they have somebody with them all the time, that, you know, they never felt alone, that the nurses and doctors were caring for them so well. That's the one thing that I'm taking away from these people when I see them on the 6 and the 9 o'clock news and they're talking about their experiences in the hospital, and just hammers home how much work these frontline staff are doing. And I think because we've never been there, and we have no idea like how difficult their jobs are now, and how much they are saving lives for us.
Heroes all, fair play to them. When it comes to Irish sporting royalty, Marie, we have a few heroes as well, and they don't come much bigger than Tony Ward. An out half with a skill set to play the game the way it should be, an athlete ahead of his time in terms of strength and conditioning, a competitor long before the days of squad depth and rotation, our Wednesday legend lit up Irish rugby during dark times. In our sport, like many others, the responsibility is on the next man to leave the jersey in a better spot. And thankfully for Munster, Ireland and the British and Irish Lions, Tony Ward left his jersey in legendary status. We're delighted he joins us now. Tony, how are you?
Ah, go easy, brother.
All day was at that, Tony, all day.
I'm good, thank you. Good.
Great.
We're all managing okay.
Yeah. Tell us, how are you managing, though? Like, we try to avoid having people talk about it, but I was out walking the other day and it seems like I'm meeting the whole rugby fraternity between Donal Lenehan, Bertie Smith. Everyone's out and about in the 2K kilometre, but everyone's trying to keep well and active.
Yeah, I'm the same. I actually moved just before Christmas back in November. I finished up the last 5 years of my playing career in Greystones. And I moved here in November. To be honest, I think I wish I'd moved here 30 odd years ago. But like I said, like when I'm out walking about the around Greystones, I'm bumping into Paul McNaughton, who would have played with me then, Reggie Corrigan, who you'd know well, and so many people who are involved in the club and whatnot. So as you say, and that's lovely. Obviously, we've got to stay our distance, but we still manage to have a few words along the way. And it's lovely. There's a lovely community spirit here at Stones.
And Tony, how's your health in general?
Great, thanks, Marie. I've had a few issues, as you know, over the years. We've spoken about that, and I did have an operation in November that I didn't expect, just around the time I moved in, which set me back a little bit because I hadn't expected it. But thankfully, everything is absolutely superb. None of us saw this coming, but look, we'll get through it. I think the nation has been fantastic in general. I know there are a few exceptions. But we'll get there. I mean, we'll get through this.
Yeah. Tony, can I bring you back to ball? And I know it seems wrong, but I know in ways you probably were a little bit different to some of the players you played with in the terms of you always had a professional mindset, the way you looked after yourself, the way you looked after strength and condition, and you were fit long before. You were a talented all-rounder. Do you kind of feel any bit of resentment that you weren't lucky enough to play it in the professional times? Or are you glad of the era you had?
Not resentment, Donnick. I've often said this. I'm very envious of your generation, but not in any way begrudging. I'd love to have had the opportunity to be a professional. I suppose the only equivalent opportunity I had was when we were away on a Lions tour or away with Ireland touring. Or I remember even when I played soccer as well. I remember playing with Limerick United in one of the European competitions, the UEFA Cup or whatever it was. And I remember playing against Southampton away and spending, Owen Hahn took us over for about 4 days. And again, being treated by professionals and professionals and in a different sport, it gave a whole different insight into it. Where I was lucky, Dunnock, I guess, is that I went to Peel College in Limerick. And indeed, Marie's dad, Tim, was with me in college back in those days. And I can tell you, I'm sure you know anyway, Dunica, Tim was some athlete. And I really mean that. He was an exceptional middle distance runner. And, you know, the competitions he used to have against Noel Carroll, who would have been one of the top athletes back then, were phenomenal, whether it was in Plassey or in Belfield or whatever. So we were all in college together, and some of the, you know, I won't go through the list of Gaelic all-stars who were in the P College at the time, but we were very lucky. We were all there at the one time, and it did give us a professional insight. And we also have people, sadly, who are now no longer with us. We've lost PJ Smith, who you may have come across in your time, goal-setting, etc., with Munster. And Dave Weldrick passed away recently. And they were two lecturers that had the influence on us in preparing, you know, helping professionally sport ahead of our time again. So yeah, very lucky in that respect.
When I was speaking to Dad about you a few years back, actually, Tony, he said that back then you were like a pop star, like you were just, everybody knew you because of your sporting exploits, and you just got so much attention.
I guess you're very kind. I what it probably was when I went down to Limerick to the PE College. I was actually a part-time professional with Shamrock Rovers at that stage because I played, you know, I was reasonably decent at soccer when I was growing up, but I played both sports, rugby and soccer, from the time I was knee-high to a grasshopper. The big problem I had was whether or not I would concentrate, or which one I would concentrate, you know, when the time came. So when I went to Limerick, I was actually, I had made a decision to go with soccer at that stage, and I was playing for Shamrock Rovers, but I was finding it very, very difficult, where, say we were playing in Ballybuffet against Finn Harps or in Kilcullen Park as it was then against Waterford, you know, you'd go and play your game on a Sunday and then I'd struggle to get back, you know, by the middle of the day on Monday. So I'd be missing lectures, etc. So in practical terms, it was very, very difficult. And then, you know, but by total chance at the time, Gary Owen, who had a particularly strong team then, were playing a league final against Cork Conn. And their out-half was Johnny Moroney, who played for Ireland, who sadly is no longer with us either. But Johnny had a very bad leg break at the time. And Gary Owen had a superb team, but they'd no out-half. So as luck would have it, I was in first year in college. Jay Deering, who had been in the same school as me in St. Mary's, knew I was out in the college. And look, between the jigs and the reels, I ended up filling that void. And before I knew it, Dunnock, I had a Munster senior medal, and it meant nothing to me. I only played 4 games, and I had a senior league medal. I remember telling Phil O'Callaghan that, and I can assure you, he wasn't impressed.
I'm just about to say it to you. I'd rip my arm off for one, and you know, there you are. I've no doubt you earned it.
When I got a second one, about I played in 4 or 5 finals in the 70s, just when Shannon were coming on the scene, and we lost a few of them. And when we eventually won our next one, I think we beat Young Munster in a final about, I don't know, 79 or around that time. And by God, did I appreciate it when we got to that stage, I can assure you. Big time.
Tony, what was the League of Ireland like back then when you were playing for Shamrock Rovers?
The one thing I hate hearing is people knock League of Ireland. League of Ireland was massive. I was brought up on it, Marie, in that I was a Shamrock Rovers because I'm from Harold's Cross originally in Dublin. So Rovers was my team. It was the Southside team, and I'm very proud of that fact. So I was up in Milltown every second week. And then when I finished, and I had the opportunity to go the rugby route or the soccer route, but I chose to go the soccer one because I was a Rovers fanatic, and Rovers came after me. Louis Kilcoyne wanted to sign me. Liam Toohey was who signed. And while Rovers weren't as good as they were in the years prior to that, in the 60s, when they were winning all the cups, I think they won 5 or 6 cups, I think it was, in row in the 60s when Waterford were winning the leagues. But the standard then was absolutely, like, it was top quality. And I still believe it is. I think people underplay the League of Ireland. I know you've been involved in covering it, Marie, and you've really got, you've come close to the game and got to appreciate it. And the standard of League of Ireland, in my opinion, is right up there. It's not Premiership football, but I'll tell you, it's up there certainly with Division Two, if not the Division One, if not the Championship in England, in my opinion.
Yeah, Tony, just on that, like, you had the skills from playing a number of different sports and different types of training, and nowadays, and we don't want to be preachy, but we tend to kind of put young people and young players and young athletes into certain sports really at an early age, as soon as they kind of go into maybe secondary school. Do you think for you it was better to play a number of sports, and that led to your ability, even, you know, when you went on to play for Ireland and the Lions?
Absolutely, Duncan. And being, again, a PE teacher myself, and being a physical educationist, I would want to see people play as many sports as possible. And I'm still involved as a director of rugby in a school here in Dublin, in St. Gerard's. And again, when it comes to the summer, I encourage them to play hurling, football, anything that they can do. Because, as you rightly say, and it's not only that, Donica, there is a crossover between the sports, you know, that you can carry and can help you in other sports. But I think it's having the opportunity to experience them. Like, one thing I regret is that, and it's just the way the educational system was in Dublin when I was going through school, that, you know, you played rugby in school because I went to a certain school on the south side of Dublin, played soccer outside and did all through my life. That's just the way it was. But I never got the opportunity, which I do regret, of having a go at Gaelic football, or indeed hurling for that matter. But Gaelic football was big in Dublin, as you know, back in the 70s, when Heffa's Army broke through, etc. And, you know, Brian Mullins and Fran Ryder and people like that who were in college with Tim Crow and myself, and all that sort of thing. But I never had the opportunity to play the game because I didn't go to, you know, a certain type of school. In other words, if you're on the north side of Dublin, schools generally played Gaelic games, where on the south side, by and large, they played rugby. There were one or two exceptions, like Belvedere, and some guy called Campbell, I think, went there or something like that. But there was one or two schools like that, certainly. But in general, it was Gaelic games on the north side and rugby on the south side.
Yeah, you brought it up there. I think there's something about the 10 shirt that we love the competition for places. And you know from being in the rugby environment, there's competition for every place. But the 10, it's box office, isn't it? And, you know, I always found it, no one was interested that Donegal Callan's fighting it out with Malcolm O'Kelly. But
that's not true.
Yeah, no, it is true. But Tony Ward and Ollie Campbell, like that's, you know, that's Broadway-like, isn't it?
Well, I suppose, yeah, there's been a bit since too. Obviously, we've had Jono and Rog when Rog was finishing out and Jono was coming on the scene. And then there was Humps before that, who I rated very, very highly, Duncan. I know you played with him a lot.
Yeah.
I think David Humphries was a very underrated 10 as well. And he competed with Rog, as you know. So, yeah, there's always been that. And even back in our time, like, going back in the day, like, one of the best outhouse of all, Barry McGann was an absolute class act. We don't have to go back to Jack Kyle. You know, BJ was brilliant. Nicky Quinn just before me. Then Dino came along. So we have always produced tens. There's no doubt about that. And we're doing it again at the moment when you look at the Byrne brothers coming through and with Leinster. Indeed, Donegal, on that one, like when you look at the Leinster Academy at the moment, and I've heard you talk about it a few times, it's scary, isn't it, when you see the talent that's coming out of that and is now actually blossoming even earlier. In other words, they're no longer having to go through the academy because by about second year they're ready to actually make the progression into the Leinster team because they're physically ready and they have all the skill sets. It's amazing where the game is now. Absolutely amazing.
And you'd see that better than anyone. You mentioned your role with St. Gerard's, but Leinster's very fortunate to have brilliant schools feeding into that academy systems. And it was disappointing to hear the Schools Cup games don't go ahead this year, you know, but you'd see it. How important is it, you know, at that level to have big games like that?
Oh, it's huge. It's, you know, people often ask me, why aren't Munster producing an academy the same as Leinster at the moment? And for me, it comes down to sheer numbers at the end of the day. Like, you look at the quantity of players that are coming through the Leinster system. And the quality of coaching, of strength and conditioning, of nutrition, and everything within the school system now is top-notch. So so it's geared to helping players come through. And one thing I don't have a problem with, and I don't think you do either, again, from listening to things that you've said, Dominic, is that, you know, when players, if they don't make it at Leinster, that they're moving on, as we're seeing at the moment, whether it's up the road to Ulster, whether it's over, as it has been traditionally, to the West, and indeed now South. I've no problem with that at all. If they're coming through the school system, as long as Irish rugby is getting the benefit of those players. But certainly we have some talent coming through. And that's why I'm not being smart in saying this, because I have been close to the system, as you rightly say, at underage. But even when people were talking about, remember when Toulon were pumping all that money in, yeah, and Saracens, you could say the same, and people were saying, well, the Irish provinces are not going to compete anymore. I have no problem with that. I knew the Irish teams would. And there'll be, you know, there'll be lean periods ahead again in the future. That's how cycles work. But the talent is there and will continue to come through. I've no doubt about that. I'm really excited about that going forward.
Yeah, long before the likes of Sean Cronin and Joey Carberry crossed over, you managed to do it as well, Tony, didn't it? You played with Munster and then played with Leinster. Like, how was that received?
Yeah, I was nearly 10 years playing with Munster, because I was based in Munster. I went to college down there, and then when I qualified, I moved back down. So I spent the best part of 10 years in Limerick, and I absolutely loved my time in Limerick. And you know, Dunnock, I mean, what made Munster the team they were in the European, the Heineken Cup initially, was the base that was laid through the All-Ireland League. Mm. Top teams like Conn, Gary Owen, Shannon, Young Munster, all winning the AIL in the early years. You know, that's when the base was laid. And certainly I was lucky that I was down in Munster at a good time, and I played against, you know, various touring sides as well. We didn't have as many games as you guys had, obviously, but I remember playing against, I think I played Australia 3 times. I remember playing them in 76 and they beat us narrowly in Musgrave, 15-13. Yours truly missed a conversion in the last minute to equalise the game, might I add. And then in 78, we obviously had the win over the All Blacks. And then the year after that, we beat, again down in Musgrave, we beat Australia 15-6, I remember. Paddy Durham got a try in the game. Donal Lenehan was very much at the centre of that team at that stage. And we had a really good Munster team in those days, so I was lucky to be part of that. And then, as you rightly say, in my latter years, when I moved back to Dublin for domestic and business reasons, I changed to Leinster. So for my last 2 years, I played with Leinster. And funnily enough, it was the only time I ever played outside of 10. I was always a 10, but Dino and I were sharing the position, Paul Dean. So Dino ended up 10 on the Leinster team, and I ended up 12 alongside Brenny Mullen on 13. And again, it was an exciting experience, you know, at the tail end of my career. But if you're to ask me, Dunnock, and really push me, as people do all the time, when push comes to shove, who do you support? I run Munster Red, I can assure you.
Come on, Tony.
Tony, we're all getting quite philosophical because we don't have any sport, so we're having loads of deep, meaningful conversations. But sport is so important to people, and I think during this time we know that health is the most important thing, but sport gives us something as well. And just some of the things you listed out there, like to be part of so many good memories for people, it must be special. Like even just, as you say, walking down the street and people seeing you, and you know, it brings back good times for them.
Marie, you've hit the nail on the head. It's why, like, at the end of the day, when all is said and done, I didn't have the opportunity to earn a living from the career, so it wasn't my profession, it wasn't my living. And equally, you could argue that, well, you play to win things, and you do when you're there, you try and win as much as you can. But you're absolutely right, when all is said and done, when the medals are put away, the cups counted, and in the bank as it is for the profession players now today, when all that's put away, what you've got are your memories and your friendships. And nothing touches that. And, you know, no matter where you go to meet people. Well, one thing, Marie, that I found lovely throughout this period is the amount of phone calls and messages that I'm getting from people in all sports. Like, a lovely call yesterday from one of the Kerry greats, Donny O'Sullivan. You know, just, you know, seeing how I was. Dennis Walsh was on to me the other day. Obviously, Dunnock, you know him through the Cork connection.
Yeah.
And a lovely... And those little things, crossing sports, they mean so much. And that, to me, is what a lifetime's involvement in sport at the end of the day. That's the greatest satisfaction of all. And why I would encourage anybody to obviously get involved in sport, as the three of us would do, but even parents who might not be overly interested themselves. I definitely think they're seeing the benefit now when we're denied sport, and they're seeing what it does mean to people who might not quite fully appreciate that. But we're sure missing it, aren't we, guys?
Yeah. We sure That's are. For sure.
Yeah.
Tony, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. And as we always say with our legends, and particularly for you, thanks so much for the memories, brilliant time, and setting a bedrock for everyone to go after to reach and achieve. It was brilliant chatting to you.
And listen, keep up the great work, Donica Marie. You're doing great. Keep up the great
work. Take care.
Thanks.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We were just chatting to our Wednesday legend, Tony Ward, there. And I think he finished off the conversation on a perfect note, encouraging people to stay involved in sport because it brings great memories and great friendships.
Yeah, and just even like what he was saying there, tying in with people. You mightn't be able to go to your clubhouse, but you can pick up the phone and catch up with someone. The chats are just as good, you know what I mean? Wouldn't you love to see the likes of Tony Ward, Paul Dean, Don Lennon, all of them on Zoom?
Yeah, and I think I'd love to see them on House Party, just dropping in and out of the different calls.
Yeah, very true.
Now, we did have a bit of news earlier today with the possibility of the takeover of Newcastle by Amanda Staveley's PCP Capital Partners. It looks imminent. And to discuss the latest developments, John Anderson, a former Newcastle great, joins us on the line. John, it's been a bit of a saga. Are Newcastle fans confident that this deal will go through?
I wouldn't say confident. I think too many of us have been here before in the past. I still think there's a little bit of skepticism about the place. I think there's quite a few won't believe it till the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, because, as I say, we've been here quite a few times in the past.
Yeah, it is quite hard to be confident just given everything that has happened over the last few months anyway. But just in general, like with the it is close, you know, we know that legal documents were drawn up and there were files in the company's house. So realistically, it probably will happen. But just in terms of the reaction from the Newcastle fans, are they kind of celebrating almost?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the one thing I would say is that this is an awful lot closer than we've ever been before. I mean, as you say, documents in company's house, and just waiting for everything to happen, really. But Newcastle fans, they want somebody to come in who's going to put money into the club, who wants to move the club forward. They've had 13 years of Mike Ashley, and the club has stagnated, to be fair. And if I'm perfectly honest, he's probably killed the soul of the club as well. You know, going to St. James's Park used to be an experience. The atmosphere was always electric. And if anything, he's probably taken all the fire out of supporters' bellies, because it's not the same place anymore. That atmosphere just isn't there.
It must be a little bit bittersweet, just given who is potentially taking over the Saudi group, Crown Prince, who, you know, doesn't have a great reputation across the globe. Are they the kind of owners that you would want?
I think there'll probably be a mixed reaction to that as well. I think the majority of Newcastle supporters just want to see somebody who's prepared to come in from a football, and I'm talking totally from a footballing point of view now, who want to move the club forward, who are prepared to invest in the football club, who want to see the football club being competitive, and bring a bit of spirit back to it. Now, I think there'll be other supporters who will look at it from the other point of view as well, from the human rights point of view, but I think the majority will be looking at it from a football point of view. And as long as these people are prepared to come in and invest in the football club and move the football club forward, and then we'll deal with that other situation that afterwards, I would suspect.
John, it's amazing how much it's changed now. Before, you brought in maybe a coach or director of football to maybe set the north for the whole club. But now it's the owners, isn't it? People look to the owners to actually set the moral compass for the whole club.
Without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, as you know, similar to rugby, football's totally changed. There's so much finance in football now. it's huge business. It's basically not a sport anymore. You know, the Premier League is the place to be. And before a ball is kicked in August, the majority of owners, managing directors, call them whatever you will, look at it and say, the first thing we've got to do is get the 40 points. You know, if you leave your Manchester Cities and your Liverpools and your top sides out of that, but for the majority of sides in the Premier League, it's all about getting to 40 points, staying in the Premier League, getting the Premier League money. And how we do it, not bothered. Whether we do it by hook, whether we do it by crew, whatever it takes. But it's just huge finance now. It's just huge business, the Premier League, and that's the place to be.
It's amazing you say that. I've played in Worcester in England, but it was the exact same type of pressure, and it came nearly from the top down, from owners. You had to get to 36 points. You had to be in the Premiership because it was a business.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's not really a sport anymore. It's just major business. The Premier League is huge business. You know, everybody wants to be in it. Now, if you stay in it by a point, your owners and your chairman or whatever are happy because they're still in it. They're still going to be there next season. They're still going to be picking up the big financial bonuses that come with that, from TV money, from the revenue, from sponsorship deals, everything that goes along with that. But first and foremost, you need to be in the Premier League.
Just on that, John, for Newcastle, with new owners, there's the potential to turn it into a global brand then as well. You know, we've seen the likes of, you know, everyone knows the kind of jersey sales in different countries and stuff, but that's what they're looking at now, owners, isn't it?
Well, I'm quite amazed that when Mike Ashley took over the football club and bought the football club, that being the astute businessman he is, I mean, and you have to say he is an astute businessman, you don't make the money that he's made if he's not that way inclined, that he didn't look at Newcastle United and see the potential that was there. You know, if he was any way competitive and putting money into the football club and the football and the side were competitive, what that would do for his other companies, like his Sports Direct branches, people would be buying the shorts from him because he is putting Newcastle United on the map. And I just think he was advised badly. I think if he'd have gone about things completely different and been adventurous, put money into the football club, became competitive, I think he would have reaped the rewards from that in his other businesses as well.
John Anderson, thanks so much for joining us. The next few hours and few days are going to be very, very interesting for all the Newcastle fans.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. Tonica, that is all we have time for, but we'll be back tomorrow with Robbie Henshaw.
Well, hey, go on, Robbie Henshaw, you beauty. Will he bring the accordion? We don't know.
Game on 2FM.